darkest day, in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power. Green Lantern's light.
Welcome to another episode of Green Lantern's Light, starring J. David Weider,
Michael Bradley,
and I am Jeffrey Taylor. This is going to be episode 8, and this time out we're going to be taking a look at some of the Green Lantern comics from 1985, including cover dates July, August, and September, which includes Green Lantern number 190, number 191, and number 192. And we are well into our coverage of The Predator.
And secrets are revealed this episode.
Oh, I'm so not looking forward to this.
Before we get into the stories, though, we want to give some thanks to White Lantern 1064, Lycos 112, and friend of the show Charlie Niemeyer, for being the first to be awesome enough to leave us some iTunes reviews saying what they liked about the show. We haven't really gotten too much in by the way of email feedback, but we do appreciate that folks were kind enough to take time and leave their thoughts on iTunes. And I also want to give a shout out to Sean Engel over at Just One of the Guys. He gave us some high praise on a recent episode and has been plugging us like crazy in just about every episode. So we hope you'll check out Sean's show after you get done listening to us.
Yep. Well, I've got the first book this week, this month, this episode, whichever you choose, which is Green Lantern 190, cover dated July 1985, but actually went on sale April 18th of 85 for a whopping 75-cent cover price for a whole 32 pages, which is, by today's standard, mind-blowing.
Outrageous.
Yeah. This would cost, the same book would cost you probably $4.99 today, or $3.99. The story title is Time Out of Mind, written by Steve Englehart, penciled by Joe Staton, inked by Bruce D. Patterson, lettered by Lois Buchalas, colored by Anthony Tolan, and edited by Andrew Helfer. The cover was also by Staton and Patterson, and features John Stewart staring blankly at the reader as the Predator gets right up in his face, scratching at his cheek, drawing blood, saying, "Gotcha." Did we have anything we wanted to say on the cover before we jump in?
It's an eye-catching cover. I'm just kind of at a loss to explain how it directly applies to the issue.
I think it has to do with the fact that Jon Stewart does get frozen by the Predator at one point, and so it's just playing off that idea, even though he doesn't actually scratch his face.
No. But, as we'll find out, the bulk of the issue really has nothing to do that much to do with the cover beyond what Jeffrey pointed out. At one point, Jon Stewart's frozen. That's about it. But I like the color choice of the background because, as you mentioned, it's eye-catching. But
yeah, I definitely have a lot to say about the – well, not even a lot, but I do have some criticism of this story, but I'm going to get to that after you do your recap.
Oh, yes. Let us recap because I'm excited to get to that. And we open to Jon Stewart beaming information directly into his head via his power ring, actively seeking out the true identity of his predecessor, who we know as Hal Jordan. But no matter how hard Jon pushes, the ring just won't spit out the info he's looking for. And Cap Matui rouses Jon back to reality and tells him that he should probably just look to the future, not to the past, just as the doorbell chimes. It's Tawny, and she is joined by Green Arrow and Black Canary, and they have found some video footage, which is very odd because it seems to place Green Arrow, Black Canary, and John at Carol Ferris's house in Coast City around Thanksgiving. This is an event none of them remembers. John Stewart doesn't even remember ever being in Coast City. And just as they're beginning to kind of hash out that what's going on, the room freezes. Everybody just goes zombie, except Cat Matui, who's alert when the Predator jumps through the window and snatches the videotape out of the machine. Katma tries to put up a fight, but really only succeeds in punching a catatonic Green Arrow with a kind of a boxing glove construct.
I would love to do that.
Predator chucks everyone out the window as a distraction, so Katma has to save them so he can make his getaway. And as soon as the Predator is gone, everybody snaps out of the trance and tries to figure out just what happened the last few minutes. And we leave that scene for a two-punch interlude. First, we have a couple of Ferris aircraft workers checking up on Thomas Kalamaku's house, but it's locked down tight, and Tom's probably inside listening to his emo records. In the second part, we check in on Guy Gardner in the hospital as he begins to come out of his coma, much to the staff's shock. And then it's back to the story at hand. We catch up with Hal Jordan, staked out on a rooftop at Ferris Air, keeping watch for the Predator, really trying to get a jump on him, his pride still singing after his defeat. And Carol climbs up to the roof and gets on Hal's case about how he quit Green Lantern to spend time with her, and he just doesn't seem to be doing that. And she even chides him for not commenting on her new perfume. Not that that'll be a plot point. Hal quiets her with a kiss, and they happen to see Carol's father, Carl, and Mr. Smith, the mysterious benefactor, having a mysterious conversation on the Ferris Air grounds. There's a lot of mysterious stuff going on. But before they can really ponder that too much, Predator shows up, leaping across rooftops. Hal follows, thanks to a Ferris Air jetpack, a.k.a. Rocketeer Pack, and trails Predator across the city to an abandoned movie theater. When Hal gets into the theater, it takes a moment to figure out where the Predator went, but the telltale sound of a videotape being rewound, which many younger listeners won't know what that sound is, alerts Hal that the Predator is in the projection room. And Hal actually gets the drop on the Predator, pulling a pistol on him. Predator goads Hal, asking if he will actually use the gun, and Hal does. He takes a shot, but the Predator deflects the bullet with one of his wings. But Hal's second shot tags Predator in the head, kind of bouncing off the helmet, but knocking him out of the booth. And the helmet, even though the helmet took most of the damage, the Predator is actually able to get away, which leaves Hal to bask in the second defeat at the hands of the Predator. And this defeat smells a lot like Carol's perfume. That's right. Hal smells Carol's perfume in the air, which means she's been there with the Predator.
I thought you were trying to say it smells like poo.
No.
You care if I go first on this one?
Go for it.
Right off the bat, I just thought of this when David was doing his synopsis. But John is still new with the ring and unsure of himself, which is the whole reason Captain Tui is there. So maybe, you know, pointing the ring at your forehead and shooting a energy blast isn't the best idea when these things can knock holes through walls and yeah. But to get into my actual notes that I've written down, it just feels like we've skipped an issue between the last one and this one.
I totally agree.
Mm-hmm. You know, Captain and John haven't known each other that long, and here she is walking around in just a towel. It just doesn't track for me.
Well, whatever her alien race is, they're just not very shy. They're like me that way.
Right, but still, it just doesn't.
Yeah, except I'm not red and hot.
Or a woman.
Well, there's that.
Right.
If you want to get nitpicky, sure.
At least I don't think you're a woman. We've never met face to face, so.
Not today.
Okay. Page 3, Ollie and Dinah and Tawny show up at John's house with this tape. I mean, Englehart's building a mystery, but I just can't help but wonder how this conversation got started, because it's not like Tawny has easy access to the JLA, and I don't know any reason why Ollie and Dinah would go to Tawny. And then Tawny makes a comment down here at the bottom of the page about John being at Disneyland. When did that happen?
Last issue.
That was where
the fight happened with Sonar.
Oh, okay. I didn't remember it being specified as Disneyland. Okay. Jumping ahead to page 9, are we supposed to care what happened to Tom? Because given the way he's acted in the past few issues, he's probably just pouting in a corner somewhere, listening to
emo music. Yeah. I like that.
But yay, Guy Gardner. Happy to see him in the books. And I also like the reference to Broome Memorial Hospital. I don't remember if that was named last time we saw Guy or not, but that was a nice tribute.
I think that it was.
I didn't catch it, if it was.
I want to say that it was, but we only record once a month, so.
Right. Page 10, then we get to the back half of the story, and I'm not sure why it's so starkly divided into two parts, but I really like the back half better than the first half. I dig this MacGyver, James Bondian, Hal Jordan man of action thing that he's got going on.
Yep, and his Nick Fury suit.
Right. Page 14, why is the Predator driving a car? He can fly. He was flying one page earlier. It's ridiculous. And whose car is he driving? That's what I wanted to know. Well, maybe we do know.
I have. Why did they give Spider-Man a Spider-Mobile so they could sell toys? They're trying to sell a toy car, a Predator car.
I would buy a Predator action figure. It's actually not a bad.
I would too, actually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'd put it next to my Star Sapphire Wonder Woman.
But that's all I had. I liked this better than the first two Engelhardt issues we looked at, but it, you know, it feels like he's starting to get rolling a little bit, but it's just really slow going.
Yes. That's going to be the bulk of my notes, just to warn you ahead of time.
It's funny for me because I ended up enjoying each issue more and more as we went along.
Yes.
Which is to say, I really hate the reveal that we're going to get to in next issue, and that's what this is building up to. And then by the time we get to the third one, I actually enjoyed it, but only on the merits that it was a crap idea to begin with. So there you go. And I don't mean to be like that. I really prefer to review and talk about stuff that I have liked and enjoyed. This one is by far my least favorite, so I'll go into my notes about that now. Page one, I seriously don't get the point of aiming the ring at John's own head.
Well, yeah, and why is he even wondering who his predecessor was?
Well, it would have been helpful information in the last issue, and that's why.
Mm.
Because that would have actually helped him.
True.
So that's the impetus behind that. And I actually also agree with Michael. I mean, this is kind of like, I wonder what it looks like down that barrel of that gun. Let me take a look. Jumping ahead to page three, Black Canary has this great line when he meets Cat Matui in her, you know, redness, wearing a towel, eyes front, Archer. That was pretty funny. And Tawny actually seems kind of jealous. Like, John, was she the one you were with at Disneyland? How long have you two?
Yeah.
And John's just like, that's right. Oh, yeah. Page four. Tawny was not looking at her old tapes in order to reminisce about her past. She's just that full of herself. She says, oh, yeah, I found this tape because I was watching old tapes just to reminisce about, you know, how great it is to be me. It's like the same reason I listen to my old episodes of my podcasts. Page six is a very confusing page. Very confusing. Predator shows up. He somehow froze everyone. We don't get an explanation of that. And we don't even get a hint of that it even happened until after it happened. Like, we don't get a sudden stop of everybody.
Right.
And so it's just a very confusing page, and I felt like it could have been handled better.
If
jumping ahead to
that line of dialogue on the next page, or at the end of the scene, you don't even know that they were frozen.
Basically, yeah, except that Cat Matui is not frozen and makes a mention that, oh, well, they're frozen. That's weird. Let me punch Oliver.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. Page nine. By this point in the story, it's just very weird and confusing. And now Guy is waking up for pretty much no discernible reason. I mean, we'll get a reason later, but there's a whole lot going on here with zero explanation. I want some level of explanation, and this is just an interlude, so it doesn't have to be here. But then what really bothered me is that this is the end of that story. That wasn't even a story. Stories have a beginning, a middle, and an end. We only got a beginning.
And it really doesn't pick up.
I mean, really does not pick up at all. And so we get into the next story, which is about Carol and Hal and then chasing the Predator. Looking at page 11, yeah, I have to agree with Hal. Kissing a woman is a valid way to shut her up, which is exactly what he just did. Page 12, so now, in the same way that you felt that maybe it felt like we skipped an issue. I feel the exact same way here because now Smith and Carl Ferris are chums. And I feel like this is a continuation of a previous story with more of a 180-degree turn with the same characters, which is to say that this writer picked up what Len Wein was doing and said, okay, I'm going to take all those characters, all those plot lines, but I'm not going to do anything with them that makes sense for what you've already done. There was this big setup about Carl and Smith not getting along. Now they're getting along just fine. I don't understand that.
But weren't those both Englehart issues? No, it was the fill-in. You're right. Sorry.
Yeah.
I think this is the first time we've seen Mr. Smith or Carl Ferris since Englehart took over.
I believe that's correct. And before that, I mean, even in the fill-in issue, they were all hating on Smith. They can't stand Smith. They don't have a reason to, but they just hate him.
Right.
Page 14. So, if you wear black, you can be invisible with your jetpack. Neat. That's different. Page 15. I didn't notice this until we were going through it or when Javid was going through the synopsis, that there is an organ in this theater. And that's actually a kind of a hint if you really know the old Green Lantern stories.
Hmm. I didn't notice it was in this issue either. So now I know the relevance of it, but I hadn't noticed it was actually in this issue.
I had noticed it, but I didn't think anything of it. And then I read the next two issues. And of course, if you are not familiar with the significance, you will find out about it. And so since we were going back through, I said, oh, well, that makes sense. Page 17. This is the last page of the issue. WTF.
What, with the perfume?
Just... I now know who the Predator is, and knowing just that and nothing else about it, there's a lot about the story that just doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. It will kind of, in a roundabout way, make sense by the next issue, but this issue is just made – it just made that reveal even more stupid.
Yes. I don't know if it was – yeah, I don't know. This is a conflicting issue for me.
I'm a little bit conflicted about it, but we'll get into that more when we hit the next issue.
Yeah, I think we may have to kind of revisit this a little bit once we get to the
final. A little bit.
So let's get to Javid's notes, and then we actually do have a backup story in this one.
Well,
we hate it.
I had a similar note about him putting the ring to his head, because the thing is basically the most powerful weapon in the universe. So yeah, let's. Let's put it on our forehead and see what happens.
And doesn't it already interact with your brain?
Yes.
Yeah.
But maybe part of his willpower was the physical. Because I remember like the second Spider-Woman, she didn't need to do the physical actions to do her little mental web thing, but it helped.
Okay.
So, maybe it was just for his own comfort.
Mind over muscle.
Yeah. So going on to page 3... I like the eyes front Archer, but I think Arrow's reaction is just as funny. Because there's a, pretty much naked red woman in John Stewart's living room.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, red alien woman who looks somewhat human, very attractive for a human in a towel. Yeah. I'm going to look.
Mm-hmm. Page 5, I was trying to look up to see if this was referencing some specific story, not an issue. Obviously, this is supposed to take place between panels or whatnot. But I was trying to place where the meeting at Carol's house went. What would have occurred? I was not. So this is kind of out of left field.
It does get slightly explained in the third issue of this episode.
True. Moving on to the next is page 6. So we've got everybody frozen, although we didn't get that indication, which was kind of interesting to come back to the delete button while writing a synopsis. So why was Catman not affected?
Because she's an alien and whatever Predator was doing was to affect humans.
Okay, I can kind of buy that, except, as well, once again, we're going to have to revisit that. So I'll save that comment for the next issue.
Yep.
But I love the irony of, and it's not really a boxing glove, but it looks like Green Arrow's boxing glove arrow hitting him in the face. It's very similar to it. Love that irony. But moving on to page 8, everybody snaps out of it. John is saying, oh, hi, Arrow, long time no see. They already greeted each other. They were in mid-conversation. Did he just erase certain portions of the memory that I didn't, or did I miss something in the text?
Yeah, they have no memory of even showing up.
Okay. Well, I guess he would, because there was a videotape. That makes sense.
Yeah, they don't remember the videotape, they don't remember what happened in the videotape, and they don't remember even showing up at John's apartment.
Yeah, that makes sense. Sorry. And that's maybe one of the biggest comments of the issue overall, is that I had to put too many pieces together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that's going to go for every story this in this episode. But moving on to page 10, I like that Hal Jordan has his own logo, that we really do feel we are getting that separate Man of Action story.
Yeah.
That I did like. And Carol is just getting on my last nerve. I kind of know why she's acting the way she is, but not knowing it, taking it out of context, is really annoying. You're not endearing her to me. Kind of like early Burn Lois.
Yeah, right now she's being needy. Yeah, no. But early Burn Lois was just a bitch.
Yeah.
She was an awful human being. And here, Carol is kind of bitchy, but she's also incredibly needy. Like, I need you to pay attention to me. I need you to notice things like my new perfume, which no man would ever notice. This is like my wife complaining that I don't clean the house enough. And all I can really say is, well, I'm a guy. I tried. I'm a guy. I'm not capable of doing it as well as you do.
In fairness to Carol, though, that's the way she's been since we started covering these books.
Yeah. Yes. It keeps getting... I thought with the new writer, maybe we would get some laying off of it, but it's gotten even needier. My dog isn't as needy as this woman. And my dog's a pretty needy puppy. Or, well, dog. She's not a puppy anymore, but...
I call my dog puppies.
Yeah.
Right, pup?
Page 12. When did Smith become Ronald Reagan?
Well, Nancy and I are still looking for the other half of my head.
It's just... And that's something that's bothering me, is that we get these little, like, chiclets of stories of the ongoing thing that's going on in the background, but it never comes to any kind of fruition or any relevance in what we're seeing here. Just like, oh, we'll save this for later, which is fine. I know we need to track stories to some extent, but one panel does not constitute a full tracking.
True. And the continuation of that story will not happen in the issues that we cover this episode.
No. So could have saved a panel. The old theater, I love. I mean, we get there on page 15. Not only the organ, now that I look at that, it has even more of a Phantom of the Opera feel to it.
Right.
Which now I'm kind of with that organ there, I'm like, oh, that puts the last piece in. So. But I don't understand... Well, another thing we'll have to come back to next issue. I just don't understand why the Predator felt the need to come here to go through the video.
It's his hideout.
Yeah.
But they don't have Betamax players anywhere else? Another thing we're going to have to get to next issue.
Pretty much. But I do agree with you, though, that there's... It really should be okay that we get the little touches on the other stories. The stuff with Guy Gardner, the stuff with Pie Face, the stuff with Smith and Carl Ferris. But we really don't get much of anything in here. And it's going to be a long time till we even touch back on those stories. So it is a bit too much.
Yeah. And oddly placed, I think, is the problem. You can – a line of dialogue maybe – would be fine within the context of the story. But as you said, the first half isn't a story. It sets something up that it's like putting the ball on the wiffle ball stand, you know, in Little League. You're setting it there on the tee, and then you just don't bother to hit the ball.
You just hit the tee?
Yeah, you just hit the tee.
Just hit the tee.
Yeah.
The ball will go somewhere.
But yeah, it was just as Michael said, I liked the second half a lot more because it felt more relevant, except for that one. It felt like my biggest complaint will be is that these three issues could have maybe been one, maybe one and a half comics total. It felt way too stretched out for no real apparent reason.
Well, I do think that the last issue, it has a lot to go through.
Yeah.
But this issue and the next really could have been merged into one, and right. It would have been...
I completely agree. I mean, most of what goes on in this issue could have been skipped over.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, once again, when we get to this next one, I'll have more notes. But that's maybe a problem that I can't really get into my notes without talking about next issue.
Right.
Look at the bottom of page 14. I just noticed this. The Predator is trying to parallel park in the worst way possible. And then there's this guy getting into the car right next to him. Can you imagine you're walking in, you know, the rundown part of town next to this old abandoned theater, and you see this beat up old car parallel parking, and this guy gets out wearing silver armor with big black claws, and
well, the homeless people are probably used to that by now. That guy doesn't look shocked at all.
So we have a backup, don't we?
Yes, we do. Tales of the Green Lantern. Actually, Tales of the Green Lantern Corps. Insect Trust. It's actually part two of what we looked at last issue. Written by Todd Klein, art by Kevin O'Neill, colored by Shelley Iber. And it actually starts off with a recap, which isn't good on a short when you think about it, because you have such little space to begin with. But for you, it was harvest time on the planet Zeos. Spider Guild, big robot-y spiders arrived to conquer. Robot spiders are attacking everywhere, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria. And in the midst of this, the insect Green Lantern known as Zax has been ensnared in one of the Spider Guild's traps, which they thoughtfully made yellow. But Zax isn't really the focus of this story. Instead, we meet the leaders of two rival clans, Hep Aptor and Hep Betrix. Don't worry about memorizing those names, it's not important. Who actually, of course, start bickering and blaming each other for the conversion of the harvest to metal. But almost immediately, they find themselves under attack by the Spider Guild's machine. Working together, they're able to defeat the machine. They get up to speed from a guard that was an eyewitness to the attacks. And sensing their cue, the Spider Guild arrives, setting up the terms of the planet's enslavement, boasting about having Zax in prison. So the Spider Guild leaders all around the world realize their pettiness, join their armies to make a charge at the Spider Guild. Not that it really does any good. And several more Green Lanterns then show up. They defeat the Spider Guild and free Zax, who then admits he knew help was coming. So he kind of threw himself into the fight as a means to align the clans. And after a wasn't it nice to work together speech, the Green Lanterns just leave the planet with a new era of peace. Yeah, this was reprinted in Tales of the Green Lantern Corps Volume 2 trade paperback, by the way.
Not that anyone cares.
Yeah, I wouldn't rush out to get this one.
Yeah, I don't have...
There are plenty of other good stories in that trade paperback. This is not one of them.
Yeah.
I don't have page-by-page notes on this one. I did like seeing the weird-looking Green Lanterns towards the end of the story, but other than that, I'm just glad this is over.
I think
these were six wasted pages that could have been better spent on, you know, John and Hal and that story.
Yeah, I honestly have nothing to say. I hated the story. Sorry.
I was kind of okay with the cliches right up to the point where Zach says, "Yeah, I knew I was fine. I just wanted you guys to work together." And
then, yeah, where did that come from?
I know.
It's important for me to teach all the other Green Lanterns how to be Green Lanterns because I'm the young Kilowog.
No, this was terrible, and probably the less said, the better. Just it could have, it maybe had some nice potential if the entire moral of the story wasn't ruined at like the last minute.
It's just a weird concept that takes a weird idea, puts some weird names into it, and then ends with a cliche.
Yeah, well done.
Moving on to the letters column, there's really nothing of note other than there seems to be really quite a negative reaction to replacing Hal with John Stewart, much like you might expect from comic fans today. But we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk about issue 191.
On May 30th, 2011, DC Comics announced the historic renumbering of all their superhero titles, and the internet broke in half.
No. No. It's not true. That's impossible!
Critics and naysayers abounded. Confusion reigned across fandom.
What'll I do? What'll I do? What an unusual view!
Not to mention the first reactions to the Supergirl costume.
I hated her so much. It flames on the side of my face, breathing, heaving breaths.
But then the books actually hit, and opinions.
He likes it. Hey, Mikey.
Opinions began to change. The New 52 Adventures of Superman is a monthly podcast where John Wilson,
J. David Weider,
and
Michael Kaiser
take a look at each of the adventures of Superman and his family of characters in Action Comics.
You know the deal, Metropolis. Treat people right, or expect a visit from me.
The Superman who appeared 6 months ago could hurdle skyscrapers and toss trucks around. Now it's faster, now it's stronger. How soon before it can't be stopped?
Superboy.
If resolving a situation for him is going to get me out from under these people once and for all, that's a small price to pay for freedom.
Release the Superboy.
Supergirl.
Okay. Giant metal creatures. Falling from the sky. Speaking in clicks and beeps. Father would love this dream.
And Superman.
You could do so much good. We could do so much good.
I am doing good, Lois.
Clark's such a loner. Never really lets anyone get close to him.
The New 52 Adventures of Superman. Available the first of every month on iTunes and at new52superman.libsyn.com.
And we're back with the second issue of the episode, which is Green Lantern number 191. It was cover dated August 1985 and released around May 23rd of that year for 75 cents and 32 pages. Our cover is by Joe Staton and Bruce Patterson, and it shows the Predator doing like Flashdance or something while Hal hides his eyes from the brilliant flash of light. It's a very weird cover. But our story inside...
The Predator flashes Hal.
Our story inside is 23 pages, and it's called Macho. I was waiting for Jeffrey to make a Macho Man joke. But the credits are the same as last...
Sorry, I already made it before we recorded.
The credits are the same as the last lead story, which is Stephen Hart author, Joe Staton penciler, Bruce Patterson inker, Lois Buchholz letterer, Anthony Tallon colorist, and Andy Helfer editor. The issue picks up right where the last one left off as Hal tries to talk himself out of the idea that Carol and the Predator are together. He finds the videotape, somehow knowing the Predator stole it, and watches it, realizing he has no memory of the events on the tape. He tries to call Tawny, but finds out she's on assignment with Green Arrow and Black Canary. He tries calling both of the heroes, but gets no answer, and then tries calling John, but has similar luck. And it's at this point that, even if you missed it on the cover, it's become glaringly obvious that this is 1985, because this whole issue would have been a lot shorter had anyone had a cell phone. Anyway,
true.
Knowing that John only knows him as Hal Jordan, not the former Green Lantern, Hal gets in a cab and goes to John's apartment, thinking he'll probably have to reveal his former identity. Hal arrives and sneaks past the doorman, only to find that John isn't home. Meanwhile, John and Katma Tui share a moment as they fly through space on the way to investigate a planet that Katma thinks might be responsible for whatever stole their memories. And soon they meet the Green Lantern of Sector 2813, Dalor of Timron. Back on Earth, Hal arrives at Carol's place and fills her in on what went down last issue. After Carol gives Hal a pep talk and Hal tells Carol how awesome she is for being his girlfriend, Hal shows her the video, but Carol has no memory of it either. She then checks her day planner for the day the video was shot and realizes that she actually did have a meeting with Hal, Ollie, and Dinah that day. As Carol is crying over her stolen memories, Ollie calls, but just then the Predator crashes through the window and a fight ensues. Hal lands a couple good punches, but the Predator grabs Carol and gets away. Hal fills Ollie in on just what happened and then swears that he'll get Carol back, power ring or no power ring. Later, Hal, clad in about 9 inches of body armor, sneaks into the theater and sees Carol trapped to a large target. He's jumped by the Predator and the fight is on once more. Hal holds his own, but the Predator doesn't let up and strikes blow after blow, dismantling Hal's armor piece by piece. Determined to risk anything for his love, Hal charges after the Predator, grabbing his arm and snapping it backwards. Unable to fight back with a broken arm, the Predator runs. Carol tries to warn Hal not to let the Predator use the organ, but it's too late. The Predator strikes a chord on the organ, causing waves of light and energy to blast through the room. Hal is thrown backwards, and the waves of destruction shake the theater. With his end nigh, the Predator tells Carol everything he did was a sign of his love for her, and as Carol's bonds snap from the blast, she confesses that she loves him too. Suddenly, their two bodies are thrown together by the waves of energy, merging in a flash of light and revealing the Predator's true self, none other than Star Sapphire.
Feel free to go ahead, Jeffrey.
Yes, go ahead, Jeffrey.
Let's see. I tried to keep it brief on this because anybody who doesn't really know me, who's listening to this, that doesn't listen to other shows that I've been on, I don't like not liking things when I have to review them. I prefer to really like the stuff that we're talking about, and this I don't like. So I am going to be just a little bit snarky, but it's not one of those things where I'm just doing it because I love hating things. I'm not that kind of a critic. Most critics are like that, believe it or not.
The rumor that Jeffrey is green and furry and lives in a trash can behind Sesame Street is totally untrue.
Is it just me, or do I look like a giant nug of weed? Page 2. Okay, plenty of other women could have had the same perfume. Thank you for noticing that. Thank you for pointing that out. No, I actually really appreciate that because I was thinking that last issue, like, oh, it's the same perfume. Well, it's not like two people would ever wear the same perfume. Stupid. And so, but here there is the little mention of it, and that is actually helpful, even though it's not the case. It's nice that they throw it out there. Page 3, Hal doesn't remember this either. Now, that I found interesting reading through this for the first time, that Hal does not remember the tape of the Thanksgiving Day interview. And, of course, that will all come to a head in the next issue. Page 5, there's nothing suspicious about Hal's outfit here.
I had a similar note, yeah.
Trying to sneak by the doorman dressed as he is, as Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., minus the eye patch.
Right. And he's just wandering around Los Angeles wearing body armor and a gun, and no one says anything.
Well, I wouldn't. I'd be like, rock on, dude. You're cool. Page 6, 7. There's a really – I really like this segue of – Hal getting to John's apartment, realizing that John's not home, wondering where he is, and then we cut to John in space.
Yes.
With Cat Matui. However, this huge splash page, just really not that great of a splash page. That's all I can say about it. It's a nice segue, just not a very dynamic splash page in and of itself. At least that's my opinion. Feel free to disagree.
It wasn't really needed as a splash page.
No, it was not. I mean, the only reason was for the segue and for the just for the reveal that he's off in space with Cat Matui, because we didn't get that before. Now, jumping ahead actually quite a bit, because there's a lot here that I just don't really even care to talk about. Jumping to page 17. No, sorry, 14. He turns down help from Oliver and Dinah after the Predator goes away and says, yes, I have Carol and yada yada. No. Accept help, dude. Come on. You're being stupid. I mean, that's where the title comes from. I get it now.
Yeah, that's what I was getting ready to say.
That's what it is. Okay. Because the title is Macho, and he is totally being a macho douchebag right now. Page 15. I love that everybody knows John Jones.
Like, oh, you're from Sector 2814. Do you know John Jones from Mars? Why? No, I don't, because I'm John Stewart, and I've never been in the JLA. But
so John Jones is like that club kid that everybody knows. He's the Paris Hilton of the superhero world.
I wouldn't go that far, because it's not one of those things where whenever John Jones goes to make a public statement, he makes an ass out of himself. So, kind of a difference. Now, page 16, that is some get-up, Hal. I'm going to wear my helmet, because it's special. And I really don't have a lot else to say until we get to page 22, where my note is basically, what the funk? Now, I knew part of it, that Predator would turn out to somehow be Carol Ferris, but we had seen them together even earlier in this issue and even in this scene, and we had seen them in the previous issue and other issues. When somebody told me that it was going to turn out to be Carol Ferris, I didn't realize that it was going to go quite like this. I guess if you are going to do that, this is a way to sort of make sense of it, but it's still just weird, and I expected more from the Predator, and the idea that the Predator is part of Carol Ferris or part of Star Sapphire even just doesn't make any sense. It doesn't do anything for me, and it's just a really, really horrible idea. And if anybody disagrees with me, feel free to write in.
Yeah.
So all I could really think at this point is that this better go somewhere and have a really good explanation, which will lead us into the next issue.
Next issue, it doesn't really go anywhere. Next issue. Next issue is just all
exposition. Yeah.
I know it's all explanation, but I'm saying it needs to go somewhere and have a good explanation. Okay. And the next issue will be that explanation. Okay. And in fact, it's not much more than that.
No, not at all.
So I'll hand it off to you, Javen.
Yeah. I just want to point out, starting on page 1 and 2, we start out in the theater, in the same movie theater. That does have relevance. But as far as most of my notes were kind of similar to what you said, Jeffrey. Yeah, I'm going to just kind of slink right into John Stewart's apartment building, and this nice doorman will be kind and not really think much of my Nick Fury outfit. I'm going to go ahead and break it.
You know, it's funny. Doormen don't normally chase you. So, like, I'm not paid enough for this.
Probably.
And believe me, I know.
My confusion comes in on page 7, the big splash page. Suddenly we're in space. Remember how we set up this story? There's this videotape that John Stewart doesn't remember. Let's go ahead and put that to the side and just go to space.
But that's why they're going.
Right.
I didn't take it that way.
I took it that way because they're going to see the Zamorons, because
it's on page 8, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I missed one line of dialogue, and look what happens.
I'm guessing you took your notes a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. It's been a little bit.
That's why I tend to do mine the day before or the day of.
Probably a good practice. Page 9, now we have left the theater. Hal's kind of grilling Carol and just kind of accepts her answer. So for a man that was convinced that she, you know, she was with the Predator, she had to be. Just her saying, oh, I don't know, that's enough. Which is it's not necessarily wrong. It shows that he does have a lot of faith and confidence in Carol, which is about to be completely shattered. But she is telling the truth in her own way. And she does freak out at the, you know, seeing that the date in question, that she did have it written down in her Portifax or whatever that would be called. But why does that say 1981? I thought this was a previous – I guess I misread the time frame, because I thought it had been not – I guess the previous Thanksgiving, not a few years later.
Well, Hal had been in space for a year, so it couldn't have been the previous one.
But yeah, I didn't think it had been 4 years past.
And it had been at least a couple of years. We'll find out a lot about that in the next issue.
Mm. But most of my notes, that's kind of where the issue goes off the rails is when the Predator shows up there. Because, as I mentioned, we started out in the theater. Then we have Predator come, take Carol. Hal puts on his Central Organization of Police Specialist outfit. Like he should be firing caps, for those of you that remember that toy line. And shows up back at the theater. So the last few pages, once again, we could have cut all this out. Carol could have followed Hal to the theater and this whole thing could have played out. We could have had this done in one issue. But no, we had to stretch it out. And then it really is kind of uncomfortable. I'm your masculine in half. And it completely went off the rails because I'm like, this should have been one issue. This clearly wasn't the intent of the Predator. We're getting kind of as Jeffrey said, you know, it was putting too many pieces together. It's like that jigsaw puzzle where this piece doesn't go here, but I'm going to pound it until it stays in.
I also kind of like the idea of, well, I can't solve this Rubik's Cube, so I'm just going to peel off the stickers and put them in the right spots.
Yes, that's another good allegory. And then page 23, we kind of have two splashes, and the last one was completely unnecessary.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
It was basically an additional page. Although I did notice, you were right, that in her date planner, it did say that it was Thanksgiving of 1981.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember them specifying how long it had been. I just didn't realize it had been that long.
Yeah, I guess it would have to have been 4 years. But she does not say that Predator is her masculine side. That's something that kind of gets revealed in the next issue.
There was an implication, a light implication.
Well, yeah, just the fact that they are both the same person as Star Sapphire, so that would have to be the masculine side with claws. You'd think the claws would go to the female side.
you said it, I didn't. Yeah, I love you as myself. Yes, and I love you. And then she flies off the bullseye, which I guess every theater keeps around. Or maybe that was left over from a Captain America movie, I don't know. But yeah, this issue went so far off the rails, I'm like, I'm just going to stop taking notes and just say this took a left turn into complete sloppiness. Huh. It could have been one issue, condense it, tell your story. But we stretched it out maybe just to pad a deadline, I don't know.
Yet, I mean, as a reviewer and somebody who critiques these kinds of things, if there's something that I really hate, I do try to find something positive to say about it. And when it's something that I really like, I do try to find it at least some sort of negative something or other that I can at least mention. Like, you know, here's the one thing that kept it from being perfect. And that's just something that it's my job as a reviewer and critiquer to do. It's not something I would normally even seek out for my own purposes. But in this case, one of the best things I can say about this is that it was better than the last issue.
Yeah, I think I still say between the two of them, there was a pretty good story here. It just wasn't. It never gelled because I was putting too many pieces together.
And the reveal itself was not something that the original writer Len Wein was going for, it seems. And then by the time you get to this and you have a new writer, it's like, well, I have to deal with this, so I'll deal with it this way.
Yeah.
Which felt even more forced in the last issue. But in this case, it's like, well, let's do something interesting with it, and we'll do this. And what they ended up doing with it, I just don't care for. And if somebody else out there does, that's fine.
Yeah. Everybody's entitled to their own opinion. It's all valid.
And everybody's also entitled to my opinion.
Whether you want it or not.
Yes. Well, if they didn't want it, they wouldn't have downloaded the episode.
It's true.
I will agree with David that I think this issue and last issue should have been one issue. And I will agree with Jeffrey that the reveal at the end is kind of wonky, but I guess we can talk more about that with the next issue. But I really like this issue, especially the last half. I don't think Carol simply following Hal to the theater would have worked as well, because here we have Hal actually going in to save his girlfriend. I mean, he's going in as the hero without the ring, and that's the story they're telling.
Well, true, and he could have just swooped down while they were on the roof of Ferris Aircraft and taken her. Then right. You get the jetpack, you get your Rocketeer moment.
Right.
Where he's invisible because he's wearing black.
Well, I always turn invisible when I wear black. I don't know, does it not work for you?
Well, I really like the orange suit that he's wearing here, and it does make me think like a conversation between Hal and Green Lantern where Hal says, "What's the difference between you and me?" And Green Lantern says, "I'm not wearing hockey pads."
For some page-by-page notes, page 3 in the flashback, or not the flashback necessarily, but what's on the tape, Hal, when he's talking about John, he says he does avoid being photographed, but he never wears a mask. First, John didn't stop wearing a mask until after Hal gave up the ring. But if you look at the flashback in the last issue, he's clearly wearing a mask. So I guess that was just a...
Nice catch.
A writer miscommunication. Or
I thought that was just like a jerky thing of Hal to even say. Like, you know, if you're savvy enough and can photograph him, he's not wearing a mask.
Yeah.
I mean, that in and of itself is a jerky thing to say. But if that's not even true, then that was a very good catch on your part. I did not catch that.
Page 8, we find out here that Tawny and John are going to some planet that they think is responsible for what happened last issue. And again, we have Engelhart just jumping ahead with no explanation. I mean, I don't expect him to explain every little detail, but it shouldn't leave me feeling like we missed pages.
Yeah, this would have been a good time, actually, to go ahead and reveal that they are going to Zamaron, except that then you would have to reveal the stuff about Star Sapphire. This is something I'm running into a lot in my own comic book writing, when to reveal certain things. And I'm realizing, for instance, in the chapter that I just finished writing, that I did reveal something just a little bit too early, but it still works because it still has to be revealed then. And here, I guess, even though story-wise it should be revealed where they're going so we get some understanding, that it would reveal that Star Sapphire is somehow involved, and then you have to weigh the pros and the cons. And in this case, I can understand why he didn't go with revealing it, but
right.
It still would have been helpful to get
the issue.
Yeah, it would have been helpful to have some sort of direction.
Or at least a bridge from the end of last issue to this one.
Exactly.
Page 10, Carol, she says she's been holding back. And if Carol's behavior in the last 20 issues is her holding back, then I don't want to see her full bore.
No.
Page 12 and 13, a nice quick scene. This is really where the issue started picking up for me. The bit at the end over on page 14 was a little over the top, but nothing really outrageous. I really am enjoying Hal's portrayal in these two issues, now that he's finally stopped being whiny about the ring that he willingly gave away. Page 15, we get a footnote referring us back to Green Lantern number 154. Did either of you happen to look that up?
I did not. I apologize. I started to, and I just did not. Oh.
I doubt it was much of anything. It's just a... it says Green Lantern of... What's it? Was it Timor? Timbor?
I didn't look the guy up, and in fact, I still don't remember his name.
Hold on. It's Dalor of Timbor. Timron. Dalor of Timron. Green Lantern of Sector 2813. Yeah.
Is that near
Pumbaa? Could be.
It's near Kolob.
You're mixing references now.
Do you know what Kolob is?
That's going to sound really weird since we had that conversation off air.
Yeah, we did.
Page 22. Guess what, Hal? You are fighting a woman now. that's really all I had. I really enjoyed the last 7 or 8 pages, and I thought the art was pretty great. The fight was good.
Oh, yes. No complaints about the art. Well, sometimes the close-ups on Hal's face look a little weird, and sometimes Kara looks a little bit mannish, but then again, the title is Macho. But other than that, the art is really spot on, and I like it.
But I think Engelhart's building momentum, and I kind of have a little problem with the reveal, but it's picking up, I'll say that much.
Yes, I'm really looking forward to the next batch of issues that we're going to be doing. But we do still have one more issue to talk about before we get there.
Right. In the Letters by Lantern Light column, there's a note from Andy Helfer hyping the future direction of the book. And it mentions the Star Sapphire Predator stuff will be cleared up next issue, which we'll be talking about in just a few minutes. And he also says that a major new storyline will start with issue number 193, and that along the way they'll be tying in with Crisis on Infinite Earths, and that Steve Englehart and Marv Wolfman have been working together to plot the crossover between the two books. So now I'm kind of curious how much involvement Wolfman had with the Green Lantern title, whether it was just coordination to make sure they weren't, you know, doing things that conflicted, or if they were actually working together to kind of craft where the story would go.
Well, since I haven't read the Green Lantern issues, I can't say for sure. I mean, I'll read them by the time we do the episode, of course, but that's one of the wonders of doing this podcast, is that it's all new to me. But as far as Crisis on Infinite Earths goes, Jon Stewart's role is not very big, so I think it's right. more about how it will affect the Green Lantern books than it is how Green Lantern will affect the Crisis books.
So, doing some quick research, I found out our crazy eye guy was actually, he was a Green Lantern that was taking payment. Dalor, I should say, was taking payment for doing his Green Lantern duty, and Hal actually brought him before the Guardians, and he actually had to go on trial for that.
So he was a dirty cop.
He was a dirty cop. Unintentionally, because he thought all Green Lanterns were getting paid, but...
And why does he still have a ring?
Because he realized the error of his ways.
Oh.
Because he honestly...
Because the Guardians are so forgiving.
Yeah. Well, he didn't know. It was... His custom wasn't... It wasn't related, so he just...
Oh, okay. It was honest.
It was honest ignorance, okay. Yeah.
Right. Well, as for the letters themselves and the letter page, overall, people seemed pretty impressed with the Paul Kupperberg, Bill Willingham transition issue, which I think we liked as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of bad I can't remember back that far. But
I can't remember if I liked the issue or not. I know that I liked that team.
Right. But there's also a letter from...
I think the art was iffy, if I remember correctly, but that might have been because of a Rush thing.
Yeah, I didn't really care for the art in it. I do remember that one.
I think I remembered... darn. I mean, it's one of those things somebody else probably just listened to that episode and said, but I remember. But if I remember correctly, it's I really love the artist normally, and that particular issue just felt like it might have been rushed, and that definitely affected the art.
But there's also a letter in the letters page from future Green Lantern editor Kevin Dooley. Another letter from Kevin Dooley, because we had one in a future issue as well. So we are going to take another break and then come back, and Jeffrey will tell us all about Green Lantern number 192.
I sure will.
He said Mongo, didn't he? That's wrong character, wrong universe, and wrong galaxy. Hold on just one sec. Ah, here we go. Flash Legacies, a podcast connecting the adventures of Wally West, the third hero to be known as The Flash. Join me, Dave Walker, in my bi-weekly journey as I look at Wally's career from when he first donned the mantle of the Flash all the way up to the return of Barry Allen. Find me at flashlegacies.libsyn.com.
And finally for this episode, we're going to take a look at Green Lantern number 192, which came out, let's see, the cover date was September 1985. The actual release date was June 20th of the same year. The title is The First Star I See Tonight. The credits for this are Steve Englehart, author, Joe Staton, penciler, Bruce Patterson, inker, Anthony Tallon, colorist, L. Lois Buchholz, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, as the letterer, Andy Helfer, editor, and research assistants by Mr. F.
Hembeck.
Hembeck!
There we go. And there is definitely a lot of research needed for this, because before I even get into the recap, this is kind of like, I can equate this to the issue of Amazing Spider-Man where Mary Jane comes back and they have all the flashbacks, but you get a little extra information about everything. And that's very much what this is. It's going to delve back into the previous eras of Green Lantern, but then it will add some information, and that's what's kind of cool about it.
Yeah, it's pretty much 25 years of Green Lantern here in this one comic.
Pretty much. So, as we begin, John Stewart, Cap Matui, and the other guy, what's his name?
Dalor.
Okay. What he said, they're going to Zamaron, because if there's any place in the universe that plays with memories, it's them. Meanwhile, on Earth, Star Sapphire takes Hal on a memory road trip. First, she drops him from a height, but he's without fear and doesn't scream. She catches him and talks about when she first became Star Sapphire way back in the 60s. I want to say it was Green Lantern, like number 12 or 16, something like that. Really, really early in the series. And as Star Sapphire, she liked Hal. As Carol Ferris, she liked Hal, but she was in love with Green Lantern. That was sort of how they were doing things at the time anyway. So Sapphire drops him off in the desert, and they continue to talk about when she was taken to Zamaron, and they used a magic organ to turn her into Star Sapphire, and she was set up to become their queen. She went to Earth and she fought Green Lantern, but she didn't really want to win or hurt him, so the Zamaron all got their panties in a bunch that she couldn't beat a simple man, since they're all women, and they removed the Sapphire jewel, which took away her abilities as Star Sapphire, and they wiped her memories of the event. But they still sent her home with the jewel itself, so it was basically like a ticking time bomb. And when it went off, she became Star Sapphire again, she got all her memories back as Star Sapphire, and was more focused on becoming the Queen of Zamaron than marrying Green Lantern. Her mind was wiped again after she lost, and she subconsciously devalued Hal and decided to marry this guy named Jason Belmore, but that didn't work out. Green Lantern eventually told Carol that she was Star Sapphire, and she got pretty upset by that, as one does. Next, Hal finally told her his secret identity, and she was openly dating Green Lantern at that point. And this had to have been around 1981, because after that, Hal this would be the 70s, I skipped ahead. Hal went off with Ollie to find America and relevance and himself. And eventually in 1981, they all had Thanksgiving together. And let's see, we have Pie Face, Dinah, Green Arrow, Green Lantern, and of course Carol. They're just like the video did. And she got really upset when Tawny, as a reporter, ambushed them all for an interview. So she got mad at that point and broke it off with Hal. She dated some other guy until Hal figured out that the other guy was an alien. Sorry. It's good. I'm not complaining about it, but it is funny. And all this time, Carol was getting these desires both to hurt Hal and to be a queen. And the Zamarons knew this and tried to convince her to come with them, but she said no. And she was feeling pressure from her father at the same time, who always wished that Carol had been a boy. So when Hal went away for a year, she was distraught and she turned into Star Sapphire. But then she split herself in two. There was the Predator and Carol Ferris. But Carol couldn't remember everything. So at that point, yes, the Predator is very much her masculine side. So what the Predator did was he began a process that would make that would put him in charge of Ferris Aircraft. And consequently, Carol, when they joined back together, he raised a lot of money, gained a lot of power, and he even hired Smith and killed Jason Block, which we kind of already knew about. Part of the reason that Carol asked Hal to stop being Green Lantern was because then he would be free to marry Star Sapphire. Of course, Carol didn't realize this, so Hal did end up quitting, which is all stuff that we've covered in previous episodes. But it was his need to stop the Predator that forced them to merge together again ahead of schedule. So now Star Sapphire and Hal can marry. But Hal says, "No way, Jose, I'm still not going to marry you." And then we jump back to Zamaron. Meanwhile, the Green Lantern attack is going well, and they arrive at the Queen's chambers, the Queen of Zamaron, just as she died. And then, of course, Star Sapphire, the Carol Ferris version, is immediately teleported from the desert with Hal to Zamaron. Back on Earth, Hal basically has to walk home through the desert, which is never fun. So let's see. Who hasn't gone first? I think it's Michael's turn.
I really don't have too many page by page on this one.
Oh, wait. It's David's turn. What am I saying?
No, it's Michael's turn.
Okay, fine. I'm sorry.
Okay. I don't really have too many page by page. The cover, I was going to compliment them on not trying to wedge Green Lantern onto the cover, but then I noticed they did plaster him awkwardly on their logo, and it's John instead of Hal. But it's a really nice cover otherwise. Page two, okay, so they're on Zamaron. Like I said, it makes sense why they didn't say that last issue, but it still would have been nice for a little more explanation between 190 and 191.
Maybe instead of that final splash page that was not at all necessary, you could have ended that with John, Cat Matui, and the guy whose name I'm not even going to bother trying to remember, so don't worry about it. If they could have had instead of what they had there, maybe had a half splash of what they actually had there, and then the other half be them arriving at Zamaron and saying, "There it is, the planet Zamaron."
That would have been
helpful, like to wrap it up somehow right. That issue.
Yeah, that's actually a really good idea, because that last splash page was kind of wasted. But skipping all the way to the end of the story, pages 21 and 22, just such a jarring switch here at the end of the story. I was really, really confused because I thought I had missed pages. Because we're having all this confrontation between Hal and Carol, and then we have this voice from off-panel, and suddenly we're back out in space, and they're fighting the Zamaronians. And then at the end, we have Hal walking away on the beach with the sad piano music behind him. But it...
the Hulk music.
Yeah. Did she get transported to Zamaron and just leave Hal standing there on the beach alone, wondering what happened, or...?
I'm thinking she didn't have a choice about being transported.
Okay.
But that she's not that upset about it because she really wanted to be queen and Hal just spurned her advances.
All right, it didn't make any sense to me. It was just such a jarring transition.
It is still a jarring transition. I'm not trying to downplay that, but I mean, I can kind of make sense of it at the same time. But you shouldn't have to spend that much effort making sense of a comic book story.
Right. But that's all I had as far as page by page. I have some overall, but I'll save those because I'm sure we'll get into them in the discussion of you guys' notes. So.
Yeah. This was a hard one to do page by page, though.
Yeah.
Because there was just so much. I do like the art style, like Staten kind of switching his style a little bit. When you look here on page six and we go back to the 60s, the style, I like that. That was something that I liked in Daredevil when Maleev, you know, if they were doing a Silver Age era flashback, he would actually use the Zip-a-tone. This is obviously technology wasn't at that point here, but Staten makes a very, very good effort of switching back and forth.
I think a lot of these are actually panels from the comics.
Well, now let's take away that compliment
because
then.
Because if you jump ahead to like the Dave Gibbons era pages, those are actually panels drawn by Dave Gibbons from issues we've looked at on the show.
Interesting. Well, I did wonder if they were meant to be drawn in the style, because Joe Staten can do a lot of things. I didn't know if they were actually trying to be the style or if they were original panels.
I think most of them are original panels. I didn't go back and look at all the issues to compare, but it is very, very seamless. They did a good job of... I don't know if they tweaked the inking on some of them or just recolored them, but it's pretty seamless.
Well, we don't get anything in the credits about it, which is interesting.
Right.
But if they did that, I will say I have to assume that replacing putting the original panels in here is probably even more work than drawing original panels.
Yes.
In days before Photoshop, yeah. Because you would literally have to cut and paste. That was a thing, kids. But my notes as far as page by page jump all the way to the end where I'm like, oh, good. Things are actually coming together. There's relevance between the two storylines that seem to be not as related as they should be for a cohesive story. So that was that's my page by page. I told you I didn't have much. So
what do you got, Jeffrey?
Well, let's see. I do have a little bit more in the way of page-by-page notes, but a lot of them are kind of snarky comments. I will say that I enjoyed this one. I've already mentioned this, but I enjoyed this one the most out of the three issues that we covered out of this episode. Page one. So Hal, I found this interesting. He used to be a Green Lantern, so it's not like the Marines where you get to keep the title. And I hadn't really thought about that before. Once a Green Lantern, always a Green Lantern. No, not the case. When you give it up, you are no longer a Green Lantern. Whereas once you're a Marine, you are always a Marine.
For life, yeah.
Yeah. The page two and three spread. Since I haven't read the early Green Lanterns, I'm not sure why they're related to memory wiping at this point. I did figure it out, but it just seemed a little weird. Like, what does this have to do with memory wiping? Page four, where the Star Sapphire drops Hal from a height. It looks like it's a good 10,000 feet, like a good mile up or 2 miles up if it's 10,000 feet. And he's not screaming. And there's this whole thing about how he's not screaming because he does not have fear. If it were me and I didn't know fear, I would still be screaming. Sorry.
Because like, that's what you do when you're dropped from 2 miles up.
Yes, exactly. But of course, then she caught him. Page seven. Wow. In the flashback, she actually kind of seems to like that Hal is beating her. Did either of you catch that? Because basically a Green Lantern ring is better than whips and chains at this point.
I'm defeated. How terrible. No, how wonderful.
Exactly. And I mean, they're fighting each other, but when you're fighting each other like this, you still have to incur some sort of physical damage.
Well, he's just hitting her with a blast of green light, so...
So, oh, it's wonderful. Whips and chains. Page seven again, though. Then they mind wiped her. This is where I realized it. So that's what that is. Exactly. Page eight, I like this explanation for why Carol made Hal stop being Green Lantern. This doesn't really come to full effect until a little bit later on in the story where he did stop being Green Lantern. But basically that she wanted him to stop being Green Lantern because then she would be able to have him. And it was not necessary for the story at all. The way that the story played out in the original stuff from a year before worked perfectly on its own. But then you have this little extra thing that's on the side. And I kind of like how this was set up. Because it was not set up that way originally. It's just added in at this point. Mm-hmm. Jumping ahead to page 12. This Star Sapphire backstory is about as convoluted as Lana Lang and the Manhunters during World of Smallville, because it really is, except that it's not just telling it all in the backstory. There actually is some backstory to it that they have then added to, whereas in the case of Lana Lang, they just kind of threw out this information, and then, of course, a year later, you never hear anything about it again.
And then Hal kisses her on the forehead and flies away.
Nice. Like the end of World of Smallville. Wait, was that the end of... Yes, that was the end of World of Smallville. Page 13. And that's Carol for you, always falling for the alien. I don't have anything to back that up with. It just makes sense to me. Carol Ferris would fall in love with an alien and not know it.
Yeah.
Page 17, and this to me is the most interesting part on page 17 here, because this is where we're not only are we catching up to about the time where we actually started off with the podcast, but we get what happened with Carol when Hal left, which we have never gotten before. Although, one thing that kind of bugs me is that Hal says to her, I need to go away and I'm going to be gone for a year. Nothing that we read in Len Wein's story led us to believe that he would be gone for exactly a year. I mean, he basically gave it a deadline. Whereas when he gets back, Carol was like, well, I had no idea if you would ever come back.
Yeah, it's just part of the revisionism.
And I thought it was a part of it that he didn't get a chance to say goodbye when it happened.
Yes, that too. So maybe those parts were either read too long ago by this author, or they were not they just decided to take it in this direction. I don't really know why. I would like to see a more firm continuity, but I do like this idea that Hal is now gone and Carol is distraught, and that's what leads to all this stuff with her becoming Star Sapphire and then splitting apart to become the Predator and Carol Ferris. If you're going to put a reason behind it, I like that. I just don't like that Hal actually said, I'm going to go away for a year. It just doesn't make any sense to me. And it does put a deadline on it. That's even bigger to me than the fact that he's saying goodbye when he never said goodbye. And we had that whole conversation. So page eight, so she gets mad and she becomes Star Sapphire and she splits in two. And my only note is these things happen. I did have to wonder, though, her masculine side? Really? All right. I am at one with my inner masculine side. My feminine side could beat your masculine side. But page 19, we finally get an explanation for the Jason Block assassination. We've been waiting for this. Because as we're going to find out in a couple of weeks, that was a part of a story that was set up that never came to full fruition.
Right.
So what we are getting here, an explanation to it. I would like to have seen more to it than that, but even just having the one panel to explain why is at least something, and I appreciate that.
Well, everything with the Predator is part of a story that was set up and never fulfilled the way we
had planned. And then we got this instead.
Right.
And finally, oh man, page 20? Hold on, I can't see the page numbers. Page 20, where Carol is kissing the Predator. And I thought to myself, is that like masturbation?
A little,
but okay, very strange ending. Again, we kind of talked about that. Kind of jarring and jumping around. I can make sense of it, but I shouldn't have to work that hard to make sense of it. And I do kind of like the ending, and I'm looking forward to seeing what's going to happen next. I mean, at least we don't have to deal with the Predator anymore. We can now just deal with Star Sapphire, and that I'm happy to jump in and do.
Yeah.
And that's it for me.
So just as a whole, how do we feel about the revisionism that Star Sapphire, that Carol Ferris was a Predator all along? Does it work for us? Does it not work for us?
It doesn't work for me, and it's not because it's revisionism. Because you can do that, especially when you have to change writers. And this happens all the time where a plot point is set up and then you do have to take it and play off it somehow. I just dislike the idea of the Predator and Carol Ferris becoming Star Sapphire together. It doesn't make sense to me even in the explanation. I like the explanation. I actually dug this issue quite a bit. So if you were going to explain it, this is a good way to go about it. And we got some really good backstory and information, even if you've already read all those books. But my problem is with the initial concept that the Predator is part of Carol Ferris. It just is jarring in a way that does not make sense. I feel as though there had to have been a better way to go about it. Maybe Len Wein had something in mind specifically to do with it, but it never was able to happen because they changed writers. But when they changed writers, I feel as though maybe there should have been a little bit more going towards the way that keeping things going the way that they were going. And also part of that problem comes up in the first issue that we were talking about, where it seriously feels as though who's the writer of this? Is it Englehart?
Steve Englehart. Mm-hmm.
Where Englehart took all those characters and just did not pay any homage or even a modicum of respect to where they had been coming from for the past year and said, well, I'm going to do this. And I'm not sure what the reason for that is. There are a number of possible reasons, and it's not necessarily that he was being disrespectful. I sincerely doubt that. I think Englehart's usually a very good writer. But he's not going with the way that the story was going at all. He is very much taking a lot of these characters and doing a 180.
Mm-hmm.
But at least before long, we're going to get another new character out of it. Well, an old character, but new character at the same time.
Yeah. What about you, David?
kind of the same boat. It doesn't make sense. And I know Englehart was coming in on perhaps odd circumstances because it was – the run was ongoing. It wasn't like Ween kind of wrapped everything up and handed the reins over. It was clearly abrupt. So I don't know if this would have been the way to go, but I know it's very much like I picture it like the Spider-Man, Peter Parker, Mary Jane marriage where you had that quandary where you can't kill her because that's bad because being a widower is a negative, but they can't get divorced, but they can't be married. So I think Englehart was kind of put in a weird squeeze and kind of threw something out just to see if it would stick to the wall. But hey, in the end, it brought Star Sapphire back into the equation. So, I mean, it is – the result is a positive. It's just a weird path to get there.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it when a writer can look at all of these stories and try to find a common thread to weave them together and then tell a new story. But it doesn't always work.
No.
And this would really break down under extreme scrutiny, I think. But I prefer this to a wholesale wiping clean of the slate and starting over for the sake of convenience.
Yes, I agree with that. And again, my point was not that they should not continue on or that they should wipe the slate, but just that the way that they went about it by having the Predator be part of Carol Ferris, I just didn't like that. And it's very much subjective on my part because the explanation, they were able to somehow make sense of it in a comic book way. I just still don't like it. It's completely subjective, and people are welcome to disagree with me on that.
Right. Well, I wasn't gonna do this, but let me read what Stephen Englehart wrote in the letters column about the story. He says, "Author's note: I didn't write this story. I should explain for those who don't know that I've been away from Newsstand Comics for 8 years. So when people began to ask me, 'What are you gonna do with that witch, Carol Ferris?' I wittily responded, 'Huh?' Having not read Green Lantern since it went on vacation after the O'Neill Adams classics, I remembered Carol as a pretty nice person, so how come nobody liked her anymore? Then I read those stories I'd missed and saw how come. This woman was to mood swings what Eddie Murphy is to comedy."
Awesome.
"Simultaneously, Andy and I were trying to figure out who we wanted the Predator to be. I rounded up a list of usual suspects and soon narrowed it down to two on the sole basis of who would be fun: Tom Kamaku and Carol. The conclusion was obvious. But, Andy protested sensibly, that's impossible. Carol and the Predator have been seen together. Besides, he's a man." "Let me work on it," I said, with the bland insouciance that's been the bane of editors for years. So then I read the entire run of Green Lantern again, looking for a thread that would not only justify her being someone she couldn't be, but would also explain her personality changes. At first, the second goal seemed the impossible one, and trying to achieve both goals at the same time seemed a good working definition of nuts. Then it all fell into place." And then he just goes on to say that it all fell into place so neatly and completely that he can't take sole credit, and he thanks Julie Schwartz, John Broom, Gardner Fox, Mike Friedrich, Denny O'Neill, Marv Wolfman, and Len Wein for their stories over the last 25 years.
I don't know that it fit together that neatly, but he really did. I mean, clearly he did the footwork. I mean, all the pieces didn't quite fit, but really when you see what he pulled off based on the history, it's actually fairly impressive.
Right. I wonder if it would be better if they had little footnotes or a list maybe in the letters page referencing the various issues.
That would be fun.
That would have been helpful, especially if they were the original panels.
Right.
Which I'm still not sure that they are. They might just be really skillfully redrawn.
Could be.
But I mean, I would have to look at the actual individual issues. And
the Gibbons ones at least look very familiar to panels we saw in stories we've covered. But you're right, they could just be skillfully redrawn to emulate that style too.
That's actually what I would hope for one thing. And for another thing, none of the other artists are giving credit.
Right.
But then again, they could just use it and then say, well, we don't have to credit them or else we have to pay them. So, I've no idea.
Yeah. So any more comments on Green Lantern 192 or the overall thread of this episode?
I think I've said what I need to say.
Yeah. A lot of pieces that didn't quite fit in. I think in the end, it pulled it off adequately, maybe a little bit above average, because it could have really turned into a train wreck very easily. very easily.
Yeah, I think it's already skidding a little bit, but it's not a train wreck.
Yeah, I am really looking forward to the next three issues. I haven't read them yet to say that they're going to be great, but I am definitely looking forward to them, and I'm hopeful that it's going to get better from here.
Well, we had several Green Lantern appearances in other books released during the time period we covered this episode. As we've mentioned, these issues we're covering now were published simultaneously with Crisis on Infinite Earths, and John made appearances in issues 4 and 5 of that title. Hal Jordan made an appearance as Green Lantern in a flashback story in Justice League of America 240. John Stewart had a very minor appearance as Green Lantern in issues 1 and 3 of Kurt Busiek's Red Tornado miniseries. As I mentioned, I think last episode, the Green Man was taken into the Omega Men, and issues 28 through 30 of that title were published. And last but not least, we had issues 5 through 7 of Who's Who in the DC Universe, which included profiles of the Crime Syndicate, including the Green Lantern analog Power Ring, who, oddly, by the time that issue was published, was dead, but the Demolition Team, Dr. Polaris, Eclipso, and Evil Star. So a whole mess of Green Lantern villains. Some we've talked about, and some we will be talking about, but some we won't. But I'll be posting all of those on the site so you can get caught up to speed. Any final comments?
I like Pat Benatar.
It was not the best three issues, but at least it did seem to improve over time. Mm-hmm. I do want to invite any listeners out there who disagree with me on the idea of Predator being part of Carol Ferris, that it was good. Please feel free to email in. And again, it's very subjective, so it feel free to disagree with me on that. And like I said, the explanation, the entire issue worth of explanation, I did dig a lot of that.
Yeah, I'm sure there are listeners out there who do have more experience with the back issues that we didn't cover than we do.
Because probably.
I admittedly haven't read a lot of those. I think David's read more than any of us.
Yeah, and that's even mine's fairly sketchy, so...
So write in, greenlanternpodcast@gmail.com. Write in and let us know what your thoughts are. But next episode, we'll be looking at Green Lantern issues 193, 194, and 195, plus a recap of Crisis on Infinite Earths. And be on the lookout sometime in the next couple weeks for a special episode, because a few weeks ago, Jeffrey, David, and I had a great opportunity to have a chat with legendary comic writer and editor Len Wein.
It was so awesome.
Yeah,
such a great interview.
We talked for him just shy of an hour, and he talked all about his run and his thoughts on Green Lantern in general, and plus a few off-topic tangents. So it turned out to be a really great interview, and we hope you guys will like it. But
he was nice enough to come on before even eating breakfast.
Yes.
Yeah, we actually ended up waking him up that morning, I think. But until then, this is Michael Bradley.
I'm J. David Weider.
And I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Green Lantern's Light, hosted by Michael Bradley,
Jeffrey Taylor,
and J. David Weider. Show notes, past episodes, and other information about the show can be found at greenlanternslight.com. You can also subscribe to the show directly via the RSS feed and on iTunes.
If you'd like to get in touch with the show, drop us a line to greenlanternpodcast@gmail.com or use the contact form at the website. You can also follow the show on Facebook and Twitter to get updates and interact with us directly. Let us know your thoughts, and we might even read your message on a future episode.
Green Lantern and all related elements are copyright DC Comics. We hope you've enjoyed this episode and that you'll come back next month. But until then,
in brightest day,
in blackest night,
no evil shall escape our sight.
Let those who worship evil's might
beware our power.
Green Lantern's light.
I like that you're fired up today.
Oh yeah, I'm in a mood, especially after the whole Carol Ferris thing. I didn't take my notes till last night, and I actually finished up my recap this morning.
I realized I just didn't have a lot to say on these issues, but I'm like, no, Jeffrey will have plenty, so I can.
It's not that I have a lot to say; it's that what I have to say is emphatic.
Welcome to the all-new Green Lantern's Light. This is episode 8 for, let's see, cover dates. Fuck, let me take that over.
All new?
Yeah, all new.
All different.
I'm making it up. I didn't write down an intro.
Okay.
Welcome to another spectacular episode of Green Lantern's Light, starring... Go on. Fuck it. This is why I always write down my notes. Okay.
I am the Batman. I'm cleaning Hamburger Helper out of my Legion flight ring.
So we ready to talk about
191
the Predator. Yeah. We're ready to catch a predator.
What did you think was going to happen here?
Just have a seat right there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's too bad that the title isn't "To Catch a Predator." Is it called Macho?
Hal's a macho man.
I want to be a macho man.
You do find out in the next issue that the Predator is basically Carl Ferris's masculine side.
Good call, Jeffrey.
Good call.
Okay, maybe I'm just having a stroke.
Wouldn't be the first time. That would be another podcast first. I don't think anybody's stroked out on the podcast yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Da, 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 da. Green Lantern
Superman.
Oh. Hit me with your best shot. Why don't you hit me with your best shot? Hit me with your best shot. Fire away.
I got bronchitis.